Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thank you for being here, part of another great episode that we have in store for you. I know the gentleman you're seeing on the other half of the screen here in front of you is a familiar face for most. We'll get to talk to him a little bit here really quick, but just remember to visit fshdsociety.org. Check out all the events coming up near your area. We are getting geared up for the walk and roll coming in September. Doing a live stream during that day, so there's a lot of information there. So building up your teams, your walk groups. And always remember that that's not just about really fundraising. I mean, that's great, but it's really about connectivity. It's getting out there with the community. It's also kind of I always see it almost like a family reunion, if you like your family and you get to see them again. And this is then that's kind of how I see it for the walk and roll event. So check all that out. I wanted to plug that first before we really get rolling here, because I'm excited to have Ryan on. You've been on the show a couple times. I know we did. I think it was either one of our great fundraising events that we do, you know, like Radiothon or something of that nature. I want to see maybe back in like 2020 and you jumped on there. It's always fun to try to figure out where is Ryan. I almost sometimes want to go like, let's just make that a game, you know, like where is Ryan Levinson now? Is he in what part of the world? So where are you now, Ryan?
I'm near San Jose, California, actually just over the hill from Santa Cruz.
Wow. That sounds beautiful. Is it beautiful out your window in your area? Nice weather.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a little cold for me, but it's all right. Yeah, I'm at my in-laws house. So Nicole at my in-laws house and we're just quick visit. Then we're heading to Hawaii and then back to the boat.
Wow. Heading to Hawaii next.
San Diego. Well, yeah, basically California, Hawaii, Tahiti.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So where do you think then you're going to be? Because I really want you to make this hurt here for me because I live in Wisconsin, if you remember, the north.
Yeah, I like Wisconsin.
Yeah. You're crazy. So there. So during like January, where do you think you probably will be during the heart of our winter?
Oh, for sure. I'll be on the north shore of Moorea.
Oh. Living the life. Someday. Maybe someday for me.
Someday.
That's awesome.
But there's no snow to shovel. So, you know.
There isn't. I don't like the snow. Snow doesn't really like me either. I find, you know, the fall hazard goes way up, you know, when I'm out there in the slippery stuff. Right. Right. Man, I'm just not a fan. I'm just not a fan at all, but I am here. I'm rooted here. It's fine. I'll cope. But right now it's August. It's beautiful outside. Maybe similar to where you are, in California, but, I digress. But the point of really why I wanted John, outside of the fact that Aaron at the FSHD Society, one of my right-hand people, is like, we really should have Ryan back on. I do love talking to you because I kind of borderline live vicariously through you and just being out there in the ocean, challenging yourself. You're out there with your wife, living the life that maybe some want or don't, but maybe there's a lot of them like watching you guys do what you do, you know, sailing. So tell us, like, what's like a day in the life? You're out in the water. Beautiful day, you know, what's like the plan of the day? Like you just wake up, have some protein or eggs or something and just, that's it. Like what's a day in the life?
No, it's far from that. The common misconception is that we're like on a vacation, like we're on a charter yacht or something. And we're just, you know, kind of wake up and decide what we want to do based on the winds and cruise around. Yeah. You know, it's great. If people want to have that fantasy, I'm all for it because keeps them engaged in our story and all the rest. And, you know, but it's really not that. It's a tremendous amount of work. We're operating oftentimes, and I don't want to say an austere environment, but it's certainly a remote environment where mistakes have much more significant consequences than they do where you have a more robust safety net, like in the United States, for example, or any developed country. You know, Tahiti has good medical care. And yes, there are some resources available, but, you know, sometimes 24 hours plus, you know, away from where we're operating. Lately, we've been spending a lot more time near Tahiti and Moorea and kind of the more populated islands. And that's a very general term. But we can get back to the United States within 24 hours generally, which is important to us because my in-laws are kind of in the stage in life where we need to be able to be present more quickly. Yeah. And for us, that's nice because it allows us to maintain the boat in a less, I keep using the word robust, but that's the best word for it. Maybe a little bit different degree of preparedness. And this is directly to your question about what is a day-to-day like. If we're operating offshore, if we're going to the really remote areas and we're sort of exploring, doing a lot of multi-day passages, just Nicole and I, then there's a tremendous amount of work that goes into preventative maintenance, maintaining a skill set that keeps us prepared to operate in those environments with a high degree of responsibility. Of course, self-maintenance, physical fitness, and our own individual skills and techniques and so forth, because we really are dependent upon ourselves. We pride ourselves that we don't go, help as soon as anything goes wrong. We handle it, we manage it. And that takes a lot of time and effort. When we're operating in areas that are a little bit less sort of extreme or extremely remote, the level of preparedness goes down a little bit in terms of, life rafts and safety gear. And you can maybe check the engines once a week instead of twice a week or something like this. And that allows us to have more flexibility with our schedule. So with that, we tend to emphasize even more skill development, but also our recreational pursuit, which is kind of like the, what's the good way? It's like our guiding star sort of. So right now we're going into the North Swell season on Moorea. So that means that we're going to be surfing more on the North Shore. Well, what does that mean? That means we need to have the fitness for surfing, which for me is a combination of wave ski and boogie boarding. So that means I need to be able to kick. I need to be able to have sprint endurance. I need to be able to have as much, this is all relative for us, of course, but core and torso stability to be able to ride a wave ski, which is like a kayak crossed with a surfboard, kind of. It's like a sit-down surfboard. But we also have to be able to rescue each other from getting washed up on the reef. We have to know how to handle massive head trauma. We have to know how to deal with shark attack. You know, these things are rare, but they do happen out there, and there isn't 911. So every day after lunch, we practice a skill. Every morning, we PT. Throughout the rest of the day, we do a mixture of maintenance and other activities, which are guided now by just like, it's like a 15-page spreadsheet that has, everything from inspecting the electrical wires in the battery compartment to changing the oil in the engines to making sure the dive compressor filters are up to date to, changing the impeller on the engine on the dinghy to, it's an endless ongoing, continuous treadmill of maintenance tasks and skill building and preparation. So to be very specific,
there's still a lot of work to do.
But a typical day, we typically are up, I would say, at first light, usually, 5:30-ish, something like that. If we're not already up before that, working on studying stuff. Generally, we immediately PT. So Nicole drinks coffee. I've never even tasted coffee, but Nicole will drink a cup of coffee, and then we go into PT, and we can get into that more deeply later. But it's usually some mixture of a resistance training, endurance training. A lot of it involves water, obviously. After that, we usually don't eat breakfast until 10:30 or 11. So if it's still early enough after that day's PT, which lasts anywhere from an hour to 2.5-3 hours usually. After that, typically lately, I've been really focusing on, well, two things. I'm helping write a book right now for another woman who has FSH, actually. I'm ghostwriting with her. It hasn't been announced yet, so I don't want to go too deep, but it's pretty freaking cool book she's writing. And then the other thing is, as I'm losing the ability to surf and do these other sort of physically expressive kind of activities that have sort of always defined me, I'm trying to find other stuff that fills that scratches that itch. And for me, it's been music. So in the way I typically do things, now I built a recording studio on the boat, and we have guitars and a keyboard. And so I'll study music theory. I'll practice guitar. I'll practice keyboard. I'll, write music. I'll edit and so forth. So stay tuned for literally.
Wow. I mean, this is a total evolution then.
It's right. A progression. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And of course, help with the maintenance. Although Nicole has really, over the last year, so that I could focus more on music and the rest, has, and because she's interested, has started taking over many of the primary maintenance tasks, especially the routine ones. So, you know, the last 6 months has been a transition where I'm teaching her. Now, now she can change the oil, change the impellers, change the coolant. She knows, you know, what the four strokes of a four-stroke engine are. And if the smoke is this color, what does that mean? And it's been really fun and empowering for her and for me, rewarding to see her kind of thrive and, you know, just roar as she like gains these additional skills and capabilities.
Wow. What a team. That's a good team right there. Right.
I think we do make a good team. You know, certainly. And I mean,
yeah.
you know, everyone's going, of course you do. She does all the work and you play music.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, you know, there's, it sounds like there's things that were passed, you know, if one had the responsibility, you pass the knowledge on to the other can't do it. You know, that's what a team does. You know, you're sticking together, you do things for each other. And then of course it balances out when it's all said and done.
And I handle the sort of more strategic side of things. I handle the weather planning, the emergency preparedness, sort of tuning the schedules and so forth. And then she goes and executes the routine tasks.
What's like a worst case scenario when it comes to like weather, if you're out there? I mean, I've been probably like the technology helps you quite a bit, maybe to see what's coming, but what's like that worst case scenario? What are you trying to avoid?
A cyclone.
Cyclone. Right out.
Stop. Yeah, that's the worst. And we're going into cyclone season and we're staying in the most dangerous area for cyclone season. Hopefully this is foreshadowing.
Sure. Good idea.
Well, you know, our insurance is paid and we take reasonable precautions for the area that we're in. Mm-hmm. But in all reality, if a strong enough cyclone comes through, for sure we're going to lose the boat. We won't lose the lives most likely because we've also quite a bit of preparedness for in each of the islands. We have a place that we're able to go for shelter, and we've got, you know, rehydrated meals and sort of like a grab and go first aid, not first aid. It's even more than that. They're like full trauma and med kits, you know, both EMTs, you know, and then,
so you're prepared that way in case you get or whatnot, that you could at least survive it, but the boat probably not. Right.
Probably not. Although one of the things we're doing while we're here is this is sort of speaking to the maintenance stuff is we're, you know, ordering and bringing back with us a bunch of sort of specialized equipment for anchoring in bad weather and for securing the boat against, you know, 140 knot winds or plus. So hopefully it doesn't come to that, but that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't want you to be like some type of Castaway 2 story.
You know? Yeah, me neither. So he made a lot of money from that movie, so maybe
that's true. Yeah, it did work out, right? It worked out for him. Yeah, and I think Wilson Sports made a lot of money on that movie too.
No question.
You talked a little bit about within your daily routine, and then earlier in the month of July here, you did some you know, feeling fit with FSHD and talked, you know, relatively candidly about physical fitness, your routine, and here within your routine, you talked about PT. So we're talking about physical therapy, doing that
physical kind training. Of
routine, sorry, physical training. So with your physical training, what are, I guess, what are like the staple things that you're doing that make sure, you know, like what are your dailies? What are your weeklies? What is that routine that like you seem to stand by and say, if I do these, I'm in good shape?
Mm-hmm. It's evolved to the point where I use the CERG. I mentioned it in the other podcast as well. And that's CERG, like Charlie Echo Romeo Golf, I believe. Yep. If you do CERG 7 week, it brings up a schedule for you that I think is just outstanding. It's free and it explains it. It's not like you must run, you must this. It just says, get your heart rate to this level for this amount of time and on this day. Couldn't be easier to follow. It also includes some sort of strength training stuff, but I don't follow that. I use CERG for the aerobic side of things.
Okay.
And that's our template. So for example, yesterday I'm on what it's 7 weeks. And then there's another 7 weeks called the second 7 weeks. And it sort of progressively builds. And I found that for me, the balance of load and recovery is just extremely well suited for it's way less intense than when I was doing triathlon full time or training in Krav Maga martial arts or self-defense or any of that stuff. Like it's that stuff is sort of like hit hard, hammer all the time, go.
Yeah.
This is much, much, it's to the point where you might be like, this is too easy, but trust it, because the idea is consistency, not necessarily hammer, go hard. This isn't Rocky where you run up the stairs four times and then you're ready for the fight, you know?
Yeah.
We're trying to build a rock solid foundation that then we can add to and grow. So, you know, that's the foundation that I follow. And when I get to week 14, I basically cycle back to week one, but I start adding other stuff on top of the surge schedule.
Okay.
So right now I'm on like my third or fourth time through the first seven. I'm on week six.
Nice.
So which is a kind of an easy week. But what we do is, instead of just following, when I first started this, it was really hard because it starts off with what's called a 1x4. So it's a 10-minute, very easy, whatever. I was walking, followed by 4 minutes as hard as you can. And I was walking, and then a 5-minute cool down. And I could barely walk at that time. Like, it was getting really difficult to walk.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's hard, you know, you just freaking do it. And I did that. And then over time, I got to the point where, by the time I was on like week, you know, 10 or so, I was doing like hour long hikes in the hills with my family again, that I hadn't been able to do.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable the change I saw. Swimming improved. And it's, I think because it's, you learn, your aerobic improves for sure, but also because you can pick the activity, and I was picking the one that I was functionally deficient in, you're sort of gaining proficiency to a degree if you have the ability to do that. If you don't have the ability to walk, walk with your assisted aid, you know, whatever device you're using, a technology. If you can't do that, swim. If you can't swim, wiggle around and just dance, just
do something, right?
Do freaking something. Yeah. Move, just effing move, you know, and you're going to gain endurance. You're going to gain coordination. You're going to gain ability. And then that's when you start unlocking the other activities. So
do you get frustrated when people come to you maybe with like a laundry list of excuses why they can't?
Not frustrated. I mean,
it's
like, I guess, like, you have to be right. Like, so when I listen to somebody who comes to me and is like, hey, this is the, you know, it's sort of like, well, why are you doing this, man? And woman, and if they're like, look, I'm a swimmer and I'm injured and I can't swim anymore, then, and I say to them, well, have you thought about X, Y, and Z, or trying this? Okay. And then they do it. That's cool. But that's not, I don't consider that an excuse. That's like a challenge they're facing. And maybe I've had some more practice.
That's a reason. Yeah.
It's a reason. Yeah. And it's kind of like, where's your head at? You know, you don't have to be like determined to win or be the best or be the strongest or whatever. You just have to be determined to be a little bit better than you were the day before. There's a saying I saw online recently. It's just 1%. And I think that's a great way to put it. Just get 1%, just do 1% better than the day before. Like learning music, you know, if I'm 1% better at playing guitar, then after a few years, you know,
you should be pretty good.
Yeah, I'm going to be good guitar, you know, but if I try to like go out and play like the most technical guitar piece the second week out, I'm just going to smash the guitar against the wall. Yeah. You know, you got to just don't stay present with where you are and be okay with it, because you're 1% better than you were the day before. Some days are going to be harder physically. And I like that. I'm like, bring it on, man. Because that's the opportunity to sort of, it's like strength training for your mind, you know, for your will. You know, look, it's easy for me to say, get out of bed and go do it. You know, even if it's cold or whatever, because it's not cold where I am as much, but it still hurts. You know, I've got FSH just like you. So I roll out of bed. I hurt effing everywhere. My wife doesn't like to talk to me first thing in the morning usually. And she knows, get out of my way and I'm going to start moving. So, you know, this morning, for example, well, yesterday morning's a better example. I got up about 5:30, 6 o'clock, put on my shoes and I did, you know, my 30-minute walk. And then came back and went straight into the core exercises and the push-ups and pull-ups and that kind of stuff, or my version of them.
Your version, sure.
Yeah, my version of them. And then straight in from that into the yoga, and then from that straight into the meditation. Showered and I was studying music by 9, you know.
Wow.
That's a typical day. And for me, by the time I was done, did I feel better? I felt looser. But even on days where I don't, I have an inventory, sort of like I've checked in. Where am I? What's going on? What is feeling good? What is not feeling good? The goal for me isn't to try to, you know, have fun or feel better or whatever. It's just to be 1% better than I was the day before. It's to be 1% more fit, 1% more ready, 1% more able. It's to make the world 1% more accessible. It's to be 1% more resilient, because we're going to need it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Than I was there before. You can get your, you know about dopamine, right? The brain chemical that's like the reward chemical. Yep. Like people who do drugs, they get huge dopamine hits and then they crash afterwards. And a lot of people will go on, you know, when they hear their little phone ding for a notification on Facebook, they get a little dopamine hit. I think a lot of people start looking to that feeling. They there's too much of like, well, do what you feel like and this kind of shit. And I think that, you got to get the dopamine. Like, you can very quickly, it's amazing how quickly it happens. If you just shift your perspective and like, if you can get to the point where the discomfort triggers the dopamine hit, because you know, you're getting 1% better.
Yeah.
You know, you're improving. It's going to hurt and it's going to be hard and good.
Right.
But that's the reward.
It's going to hurt anyway. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, pain is inevitable. I mean, I've told people, like, they're like, how are you doing? And they say it in that certain tone that I know they're asking, how physically am I doing? And this and that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm in pain all the time. And I say it really matter of fact, like, oh yeah, like I walked down the street yesterday. You know, that it's just very matter of fact. And they kind of look at me like, really? Like shocked. Like, oh yeah. I said, me and pain are best friends, man. We're BFFs. Yeah. If I wake up and I don't have pain, something's wrong. Yeah. I find it the opposite. And it is an acceptance to some degree, but yet, like you were talking about in the morning, you still feel like, really, again, like I got it. Can I start again? Can I take the step? You know, you have to make the decision every morning. Like, I'm going to rise. I'm going to stand. I'm going to just accept the fact this is going to hurt. It's going to be stiff. Let's start it again. You know,
I look at it more as like the pain is like a gift. It's like,
wow. Yeah.
This is going to be. Like if it was easy, if I could hop out of bed and everything was easy and felt great and stuff like that, I think I'd get bored with it pretty quickly. I think it would be too comfortable. It would be like, you know, people are like, oh, wouldn't it be great to like not have to do any work at all and just sort of sit around all day and, you know, do whatever you feel like. No, you'd go insane. You're a human being. You're an animal that's been like evolved from bazillions of years of evolution. You've evolved from zillions of years of evolution.
Yeah.
To thrive through movement, through challenge, through examination, let's say. And having that pain in the morning, sometimes just getting out of bed, just turning off your alarm and stepping out of bed, that's your first victory.
Yeah.
My boat alarm keeps going off. Somebody's walking around on the boat right now.
What?
You gotta go. No, they're doing cleaning. Yeah. Well, I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
it's an opportunity to succeed a little bit. Like everybody feels good when you finish, you know, the chore that you had to do or whatever. Right. Well, if the first one is just get out of bed. Boom.
It's an easy win.
Your first hit. You've got your first win. Yeah. Okay. What's next? Put on your damn shoes. Good. Shoes are on. What's next? Yeah. Open the effing door and step out into the cold. It's cold. It hurts. I don't feel good. All right, cool. Keep moving.
Yeah.
One foot in front of the other. And it's not always like that. A lot of times it feels great. And when the workouts are done, oftentimes you've got the endorphins, you know, you're loose. Mm-hmm. And especially when you stick with this a little while, you'll start to see the improvements. You'll start to see the speed increase, the endurance increase, the strength in some areas increase, other areas never increases. Maybe it gets even weaker, but you will see some improvements somewhere. 100%. There's no way around it.
But you have to keep doing it. You know, the mental blocks. So Ryan, I'm like, you know, you're not superhuman. I'm sure you've had those darker days or moments in a day, even if they're quick, where there's doubt or there's irritation or whatever, negativity filters in. What is your, skill set that you dip into or advice you'd give for someone that has that maybe more often than they want to feel that way, to kind of like be more resilient through it, to work through it?
You know, there's a couple of ways that I get through that, because it's incessant for me, especially like all of us with the pain in the FSH and all the rest, but also on the boat, you're constantly, things are breaking, or all my friends will go surfing and I, you know, can't anymore, or whatever the situation is. You know, all of us are going to face that. We're going to face it increasingly more often. And for me, you know, I'm what's going through my head right now are endless, countless, infinite examples over just even the past hours, you know. That's our life. Is a lot of our life is pain and loss, obviously, but a lot of it's not. And I think there's a few things I do. First of all, it's the way that I look at the situation, I think, that matters. And I think that, not I think, for sure, meditation has taught me, you know, I think the misconception with meditation is that what you're trying to do is relax or clear your mind or, you know, gain intense focus, you know, or something like that. And those are sort of ancillary benefits, but really what you're doing is you're increasing your awareness of the thoughts that you're having when you have them very, very early on. And emotions arise from thoughts. You know, if your, you know, significant other is cheating on you and you walk in on them, yeah, that hurts a lot. But you could also be nowhere near them and think to yourself, oh, I wonder if they're cheating. And then you're going to have this emotional reaction. It's a thought.
Yeah.
Oh no, the cyclone's coming maybe this year. I'm afraid. That's a thought. And you're having a visceral response to it. You know, literally hormones are being released. Your, you know, biochemistry is changing in response to this thought. Well, if you're aware that you're having those thoughts very early on, and you almost sort of can step back and just observe them happening, you can disconnect that emotional response because you recognize it for what it is. So that takes practice. It takes discipline. And I think discipline is just like getting out of bed. It's that thing you have to teach. You have to learn that the discipline itself, the harder it is to execute that discipline, the more of a reward, you know, the more of an opportunity there is for a reward for doing it, you know? Yeah. And so just sit, you know, go Headspace is a great app, for example. And, and I'll sit for like, I'm not, you know, sitting on a mountaintop for, you know, a week at a time or something chanting, you know, it's like literally 10 minutes a day for F sakes, you know? And I think that the biggest turn in my life happened when I started practicing yoga and meditation daily, you know, 20, whatever years ago it was. And some days it's literally just 5 deep breaths or something. Other days it'll be half an hour to an hour of sitting present with thoughts. But when you learn how to do that, you start to very quickly know, you know, you're talking about, well, you know, some days you're faced with all these hardships and these challenges and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but how much of that is just me thinking to myself, oh, this is unfair and I can't do this, you know, creating this whole thing. This cascade of emotions in response to this kernel of a thought. And the sooner you're aware that you had that thought at the very beginning, the sooner you can go, okay, well, that's a thought. Is it actually what's happening right now? Right.
Is it reality right now?
Yeah. And maybe it is. And I say, okay, then what am I going to do about it? And that's the second part. And that's basically, you know, okay, so it's going to be hard. Good. I'm a fucking warrior. Make that's it
right.
hard.
Right.
You know,
right.
Make it hard.
Yeah.
Make it fucking harder.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I'm not exercising so that I can like get a little trophy at the end of it, or so that, you know, I don't tell myself, well, if I exercise for 10 minutes, then I'll have a Sunday, you know. Yeah. I don't want a fucking Sunday. Like my reward is that I got up and I effing did it. And I'm a little bit better than I was before I did it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're hunting for that 1%, like you said. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. You mentioned a Sunday. Okay. And you mentioned, you know, I mean, those are all temptations for all of us. It's the Sundays, the bad food, blah, 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 sitting too much. Doctors telling us early on, take it easy, watch out, all that garbage.
Yeah.
Which we now, most of us, are finding like that's bull crap. We know more than our doctors do, for God's sake. But nutrition is part of this. You hit on the physical side, your routine, that equals habit. Good habits are good things. You know, getting into that routine, like you mentioned about, you know, getting up, giving yourself that time and space to accept the pain and move forward. And then, you know, going through your routine of a walk and the PT, whatever that is, that version is for you, doing the yoga, doing the meditation. Mm-hmm. So then when you said you had breakfast at 9, you know,
No, we have breakfast at like noon.
At noon? Damn. Okay. Yeah. So you have breakfast at like noon or that first, you know, like those meals. Like mm-hmm. what kind of food choices are you making, you know, daily to help fuel that you can do then those things that you're trying to do physically?
This is easy. Great question, by the way. I think it's really important. And I think this comes back to, again, mindfulness and also those dopamine hits. Like if you are getting little dopamine hits off of like refined processed foods or, you know, high fat, like super high, bad fat, whatever foods, and you become mindful that your craving for that thing is in a response to these dopamine hits, then you're aware of where it's coming from and it's easier to let it go. So that circles back to the whole, you know, discipline of just developing your mindfulness. And, you know, I get a dopamine hit from feeling as strong and capable and sort of, you know, able as I can be. That's where I get my reward. I get my reward, like we talked about, from being 1% better than I was the day before. 1% is not much. It's just a tiny little bit better than the day before. It's not like I'm going way out on a limb and struggling every day. It's like literally, you know, I got up 1 minute earlier, maybe, you know what I mean? It's just a little bit, but then the day before. And you can do that with diet as well. And for me, you know, we talked about sort of a warrior mindset to this. Well, I've never been to war, but like, you know, closest was on the ambulance, I guess, you know, we were shot.
Right.
At one. But no, you don't go out into the field for whatever it is you're doing. Let's say using the war analogy with a gun that's like, you know, dirty and, you know, has maybe like old ammunition in or whatever. You want to go out there with the best something possible equipment.
Yeah.
You want to be ready, you know, like let's do this, you know. I'm trying to think of a less violent war-ish, maybe driving your car or something, you know, you can go out and
you want to make sure it starts. You want to have the reliability. You want to have the go-to. You want to make sure that it's clean.
Look, this isn't, you know, high F in science or something. Everybody understands what we're saying here, but in terms of for my own personal food choices, zero sugar, like very, very close to zero, simple sugars other than fruit, you know, stuff that's in fruit. Very, very few processed foods. I eat bread. Literally, I think the only time we have to go to the store to buy bread, because when we fly, we make cheese sandwiches just because it keeps on the plane.
Yeah.
So almost never bread. I don't eat very much, if any, fried food. Almost never pasta.
Oh, that's going to be tough for me, man. I'm married to an Italian.
You don't have to not eat pasta, but it's just, I just don't. Look, like a typical, my breakfast is almost exactly the same every day, literally, and has been for 15 years. So I talked about this a little bit, but I'll review it. I have, it's like a half a bowl of raw oats and usually fresh fruit. Out here it's berries and things like that. In Tahiti, it's more like, you know, papaya and mango and things like that. Nuts, lots of nuts and seeds mixed in there, just a variety, whatever's available. And then I put water in there, usually just room temperature water, and let it sit for a few minutes. And then while that's sort of soaking in a little bit, I usually have an egg or up to three eggs, depending on how I've been training and how I feel. Now, keep in mind, we're coming off of fast because we eat dinner at like 5:30, 6 o'clock. We eat, you know, breakfast the next day sometime between 10 and noon. So that's intermittent fasting. So our body has, you know, if you're interested in this stuff, there's all kinds of podcasts about it. But
yeah, the fasting. Yeah.
Intermittent fasting. It after you've done it for, you know, not even that long, really, your body sort of becomes really efficient and you don't need to eat as much, really. You don't feel like you need to eat as much. And when I started doing that, like I, you know, my weight's always going down like everybody, cause we're losing muscle. Right. But I became leaner for sure. And had more sustained energy throughout the day. I don't really get much cravings after that breakfast. Oftentimes I don't even really need a lunch, but I'll eat like a handful of nuts or a little salad or something like that. And then dinner is usually chicken, fish, like some kind of animal protein.
Yeah.
And then usually steamed vegetables, or a salad and that's simple.
Yeah.
Rice, like Nicole, that's about as carby as we get is the oats. And then, you know, some brown rice or something like that.
Nice.
But it's not like you've totally failed, you know, at life if you like go out once in a while and have a pizza or something. You know what I mean?
It shouldn't become part of your daily, weekly diet, that it's like, it does make you feel more sluggish when you eat that stuff. There's no question. I mean, I'm guilty 100%. Of that all the time. And I found I did a little bit of some, I guess it was fasting, but I didn't really realize I was kind of doing it. But it's like I just had a different kind of breakfast, like you're talking about. For me, it was like a meal replacement, like protein shake type thing, and then that was it, like a bowl of fruit. That was it, and that actually sustained me very well throughout most of the day until at night when we would eat, and it would be something where it's a very low carb. There's some type of meat involved and a lot of vegetable in there, and then that was usually enough. Yeah. And I was surprised by that, but that usually was enough. It's like all that in between. Like you said, like grab a handful of nuts instead of, a Twinkie.
Yeah.
It still comes by choices and what do you have in your house, or what do you have in your cabinet, your boat, or wherever you're eating your food. Like, you have to make the choice when you purchase, like, this is what I'm going to eat and this is what I'm going to have. And then if I don't buy the other stuff,
and
we are in control.
Yeah. And you gotta be mindful of why you're making these choices. If people are interested in knowing more about intermittent fasting or diet choices that like sort of a deeper dive into it, Andrew Huberman has a great podcast. Okay. I think it's called the Andrew Huberman Lab or something like that, where he's a Stanford, I think neurologist or sports physiologist or something like this, but he makes it very accessible. There's another one, I can't remember the girl's name, who does a great job. But when you intermittent fast, the very, very short version coming from a very non-qualified person to say this is that you enter a state where your body's sort of, I don't want to say eats itself, but like it eats the like damaged cells that are created through stress, through not just emotional stress, but also stress on our body, like oxidative stress and the rest. Mm-hmm. And when you give yourself, when you are able to enter into that state, it basically cuts out the like damaged. And anyway, so you notice the difference. The inflammation goes way, way, way down very quickly. And like you said, you start developing sustained energy in the rest. Now, in terms of food choices, like what you were saying, I think a lot of people are thinking to this, yes, but what about the pleasure in life? And,
you only live once, right?
Yeah. Like, what the F are they talking about? It's kind of like, let's use a really freaking super inappropriate analogy, but I'm kind of an open book especially with the FSH community. And I think about masturbation. Okay. So people maybe they masturbate, let's say every night, and it feels great. And they get this wonderful release on stuff. But anybody who's ever participated in such things, not that anybody of us have, no idea, but you might notice that if you don't for a period of time and then you do it, it has a additive benefit, let's say, or something like
that. You're right. Right. That would make sense, because you're almost what, like depriving to some degree, or
I don't know if you're necessarily depriving, but you're not having that become a baseline.
Ah, gotcha.
And I think that's really the important thing. And that's what I'm talking about with all of this. So if you eat your pizza one day a week or 2 days a week, you're like, well, only on the weekends, and that becomes your baseline. And then when you don't have the pizza, you feel like you're being deprived or something, rather than when you have the pizza, wow, this pizza is really good. And the rest of the time you feel good, not because you have an absence of guilt, but because you have these dopamine hits by the discipline that you've exhibited. If that's the
right word. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because I think it goes back to what you've been saying a couple of times. It's being very conscious of why you feel like you feel when you're either eating that food or whatever that dopamine hit, or where's it 100%. Coming from? Right. So if you can create that in a different way that's healthier, then you're not looking for it from the other ways
that are right. And you know, after a while, that dopamine hit, you're looking for the dopamine hit, but you don't really get it that much. Mm-hmm. You know, like people who, I'm sure there are people listening to this who can relate, that eat pizza maybe on a regular basis or have like a regular sandwich with lunch every day or something. Mm-hmm. If you haven't had one for a while and you eat that sandwich, you're like, wow, this tastes amazing. Like this bread and everything. And, you know, the Coke I'm having with it and all the rest. But if you have it every day, you crave it and then you just eat it, but you don't really get. So there's like kind of, you're not even getting like the bad for you benefit of it anymore. It's just, just stop doing it. And you know what, to anyone out here who's going, well, that's not me, I'm not, willing to give up a sour patch. You do you, man. You know, like,
yeah. I mean, no one's telling anybody what to do.
Right.
I guess if you're
even judging
why you feel the same, you know, if you're wondering why you're feeling crappy or you're feeling down, or sometimes it has something to do with what we're talking about. It's the routine of getting yourself into a balanced life of good exercise, good mental state. You know, meditation is huge. But this is all goes back to routine.
Yeah.
Right.
Discipline.
Discipline. Some of us aren't. Some of us are more than others. Some of us would adapt to this very quickly. Others might struggle.
So you don't have to be disciplined. Okay. You have to just be willing to become 1% more disciplined.
Perfect.
And then repeat.
That's what I was going with. Yeah.
Yeah.
So stop thinking like it's this massive change you're making. It's 1%. Right.
Yeah. It's look, make as much of a change as you want to make, man. I mean, like, it, go charge, you know, but you don't have to do that. Like, you know, you just move in that direction, move at whatever speed or level you can. But on those days when you wake up and you don't want to get out of bed and you feel horrible and everything is really, really pushing against you.
Yeah.
And maybe you're really craving shit food or whatever it is. And, or you just really want to, like, you know, sleep in a little bit more. Something. That's when you just need to do the 1%.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, my thing is like at a minimum 1%, you know, if I feel good, like yesterday I felt good. So, you know, I drilled it. I walked
farther. Yeah.
Well, I didn't exceed the parameters, but I doubled like the core workout and the, you know, and then I banked it, you know, I banked it. I said, okay. And then tomorrow, you know, I'm going to be able to hit it again, you know, and you sort of like, can't be stupid about it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You can easily hurt yourself if you're just totally irresponsible and you just decide. And for anybody can be disciplined for a day, a week, even maybe like a few weeks, you know, get out there and be disciplined for the rest of your life. You know, let's, why are we screwing around with this? This isn't like, let's just feel a little bit better and be a little bit better, like for a week. And then we'll eat our pizza and sleep in all day and stuff. If that's what you want to do, you know, go
fine.
Whatever, man, go for it. You know what I mean? If not, hey, jump in, man. We're a tribe. Let's do this. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well said there. My brother would always say that. You got to find your tribe. You go find your family because not everybody likes their family. But you got to find that like tribe of people that like kind of get you. They understand, you know, and you come on from all different parts, from all different places. I've said that all the time about this FSHD thing. It's like, it sucks to have it, but there's so many connections that I would not have made if I didn't have it. So, you know, that blows some people's minds that are like, wow. So you're almost like grateful. Well, I don't know if grateful is the right word. I would always tell them, but I'm fortunate that I can at least have this opportunity and see that as an opportunity to meet people such as yourself, Ryan, and others. That's like, okay. Because this advice goes beyond FSHD. This is advice that's for really anybody.
Yeah.
That's overcoming anything, even if it's what seems like an insurmountable thing to overcome right now. It could be something of grief. It could be something that you're being diagnosed with a disease. Hell, you know, I tell people, I say, just because I have FSHD, that doesn't mean I'm not going to get anything else crappy. You know, something else could happen. I don't know. But, you know,
it will happen.
It will. Right. So then what are we doing? Goes back to your preparedness of like on the boat and like, how are you ready for these things? The best you can. Not that you're going to be perfect in those moments, but you're better prepared for it, you know, and then that becomes part of your lifestyle, hence routine and so forth. And then if you're healthier, more, you know, doing the right things, then you can respond to those situations, I think, a lot better, or maybe even avoid them altogether, possibly, especially
100%. With
nutrition. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you're talking about also mindset that I think, you know, everybody's not living on boats in the remote tropical Pacific, you know, but everybody is living somewhere and is faced with, you know, people who have malintent. So, well, what are you doing about self-defense? What are you doing? Are you going to be just constantly like, if you want to, God bless you. But if you want to like always have to have somebody else, you know, be the person who comes to help you in every situation,
well,
good, but at least support the people who are there to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Whether that's police or first responders or your caregiver or your loved one or whatever, but you know, I personally find a sense of pride in preparing myself as much as possible. So, you know, I've been actually getting kind of a deep dive into self-defense, accessible self-defense.
Oh, nice.
You know, we can't run. So So what are we supposed to do if, like, you know, the standard, like, let's say woman or person, anybody walking in a dark alley, and then, you know, the bad guy or bad girl comes up to them. Well, they're like, well, you can spray mace in their eyes and run away. And I'm like, no, you can't. You can spray mace in their eyes and then, like, hobble away while they chase after you, pissed off because you spray mace in their eyes, you know? It just doesn't work for us, you know? Man. Like,
right.
We're like,
right.
Well, you know, you can study jujitsu. And I'm like, well, I can watch jujitsu.
But how am I doing it? Exactly. Physically, right. You know?
So what options are available to us? Well, then it's like, well, you can draw a gun and you can shoot them. And I'm like, well, you know, like, I don't want to shoot, like, the you know, maybe homeless person who's
just having a bad day.
Yeah, or like even just like the drunk college kid who's like, you know, hey cripple, what's your, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know, whatever, like I don't really want to shoot anybody if I don't have to,
right?
Only if my life or the life of someone I love is at danger, or even
so to go to that extreme. Well, then yeah, it all right. Even goes to, like, you know, this crazy world that we're in of, like, mass shootings. You know, right. I've talked about this, like, with my wife. I'm like, if something like that happens, and it seems like it happens so much, I'm like, I feel like it's almost just a matter of time. So you're right. In the situation, you know, and until you start knowing people that were in the situation and survived it or lost someone because of it.
Yep.
Said in that situation, I just, like you said, like, I'm not running away. I'm like, I'm not running away.
Right.
Everybody else is going to run away. I said, so here's probably what I'm going to do. I'm probably going to run at them. The best I can. Like, I'm getting something. I'm like, all right, everybody else is gonna run away. I guess I'll be the guy that's gonna swing at him or something. I don't know.
What
choice are we gonna have? You know, like in certain situations, it goes back to adaption, right? You are adapting. You have to adapt to the situation. FSA people, our tribe, I think we're master adapters. So if you're talking self-defense or whatnot, like, how are we adapting to defend ourselves in a way that we can, that's effective with surviving that situation? So yeah, have you found something like that? Yeah. And realistic.
Yeah, I've only been working on this for maybe almost a year now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I actually have found a few things. The one thing that I'm probably most excited about for FSH, you know, for us and for anybody with physical disability or even anybody in general, there's a company called Byrna. It's BYRNA.
Okay.
And they're one of a number of companies that make a product like this, but I think theirs is the best, and they certainly have the biggest variety of options. And what they make is it's basically, it looks like a gun, mm-hmm. operates like a gun more or less, mm-hmm. but it's not a firearm. There's no explosion. It uses the same technology that paintball guns use.
Okay. But
souped up, like a lot souped up.
Nice.
And it shoots little balls that look like paintballs, but there's basically two categories of these things. One of them are kinetic, which are just these solid little balls. And when they hit, it just hurts a lot. And that would be the equivalent of, like, punching somebody, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other little balls they have are filled with chemicals. So either pepper spray or literally tear gas. And those are the equivalent of macing, but you can use them at a distance. So before the person is in your face, where an able-bodied person might pull up and spray their thing and then run away, you can identify the threat earlier on. And that's just developing head on a swivel mindset and being sort of more situationally aware, mm-hmm. which benefits anybody.
Oh, yeah, use your instincts, right?
Yeah. And then if you see a threat approaching, now your only choices are not be a victim or kill the person. You know, there's an intermediate step, which is basically, hey, go away, leave me alone. They're not willing to do that. You can maybe put like two or three kinetic rounds in there first, so they get these impacts. It's like, don't come any closer. And if they continue, then you fire this round and the thing blows up in their face and they get tear gassed. And now,
wow,
far enough away from you that you can,
you got distance, you have space, and hence
100%.
Yeah.
Legal in every state. You don't have to have background checks and all this stuff. It's the same. It's less lethal. Like, police forces use the same. They actually literally use the same.
Use the same weaponry.
Burners. Yeah. And
wow, that's cool.
So that, and then also there's some things like Burna makes a backpack. This is, I think, a little over the top for a lot of situations, but this is an example of the kind of stuff that exists if you're interested in it. It's a backpack that has literally bulletproof plate in the back.
Really? And
if there's a situation where somebody, if you're in a neighborhood that has a lot of shooting, when you hear the gunshots, you can sort of, I have to bend over to do it. You're supposed to reach back, but you bend over just like how we take off our t-shirts.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You pull this thing out and it pulls over the front, and now you're wearing a bulletproof vest.
Wow. Right.
So there's just stuff like that. Noisemakers that can draw attention. So, you know, and sometimes deter people from coming. And I think a lot of it is developing the awareness of when a threat might be approaching and where it might be coming from. Things like that noise that I was talking about earlier on my boat, there's just Ring cameras that you get on Amazon for like $100 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it detects motion. And when it detects motion, it sends you a notice online, and then you can see right away whatever's moving around.
The threat could be or not. Yeah,
exactly. So we use that. We have those on the boat now because we're in an area that has internet most of the time. So if at night somebody's coming aboard the boat, I know about it. I can go out, turn on the lights and say, hey, go away. And if they don't, if they're still being aggressive, you know, a round from the burnout will change their mind pretty quick. Right. You know?
Change their mind. It was absolutely.
None of it required any kind of extra level of strength or physical ability or anything else. It just required adaptation.
Wow.
And a mindset that you're not going to be a victim, that you want to handle this situation. Mm.
Man.
A little tangent there.
It was great because I never thought we were going to go that direction. I'm glad we did, because I think it's something no one has talked about yet. As long as I've had this platform for like 7 years, I don't think anybody's talked about self-defense. What do we do? We look like, like shooting fish in a barrel. You know what I mean? Like we're an easy target. We're an easy target. And I think that goes for anybody that has some type of disability. Yeah. So what can you do to make yourself less that? Defend yourself a little bit. I don't think there's anything wrong with thinking that way, because I think you have to be aware. Not everybody's nice. We all know this.
Yeah. You don't even have to be like pro-gun or whatever. Like anti-gun and still have some technology that's available to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? I think that is a smart thing to do and get a little more proactive without being crazy about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Like I don't walk around like, you know, if you look at our channel, you'll see a lot of videos in recent time and coming up more soon that show us, you know, basically doing tactical training with these like burners. Nice. But that's because the way I do things is I want to explore it as far as I can and understand the iteration so that one, it's for myself, but also, you know, people can pick and choose which level is appropriate for them and all the rest.
Awesome. Man, well, we have killed like the whole episode now, man. We've done everything from how do we deal with that mentally? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Oh, this is good stuff. This is good stuff. So if those that don't know how to find you out there in the social media world, how can they do that? Talking about the YouTube and the Facebooks and the Instagrams and all that, where can they find more of you?
Well, our videos are on TwoFloat on YouTube.
Yeah.
TwoAfloat. And then I'm Salty Ryan, the number one on Insta, or TwoAfloat on Insta. And Facebook is just Facebook/ Ryan Levinson, RyanLevinson. And I try to be good. I get like a lot of messages from a lot of different sources, but I try to prioritize FSH as much as I can. And just know that I was going to say I'm going to be a straight shooter, but that's, I don't want to make a metaphor. I'm going to call it how I see it.
I think we got a taste of that.
Yeah. That's been what I found has been the most, I appreciate it when people are like that with me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So if you're going to shoot it to it straight, last question I have is, you're going to shoot it then to someone straight that just got diagnosed with FSHD. You know, a lot of us get diagnosed and we're like in our mid-30s, 40s, something like that. Things have been off. A lot of us have had that similar story. And they reach out to you, like, what are you hitting them with advice? What is that? What is Ryan's advice for that person?
So they've already like confirmed the diagnosis.
Doctor says, hey man, you got this. And then they got like what I got. No pamphlet, nothing. There's no cure. Yeah. There's no treatment. Take it easy. You know, don't lift heavy weights, just lift light, you know, blah, blah. A lot of it, you know, eventually you're going to be in a wheelchair, all the doom and gloom, you know, littered with a little sliver of hope, maybe, if you got a decent physician.
Yeah, I'm, it depends on the person, you know, sort of how they communicate and where they are mentally, but more or less it's like, you know, saddle up. Like, you know, saddle up or why are you bothering calling me? You know what I mean? Like,
nice. Wow. Yeah. You know, yeah. Because this is what it's going to be, right?
Yeah, I can help you. I can show you, you know, what works for me and what works for other people. I can put you in touch with people. I can network and all the rest. But, you know, and you've got your support group and all the rest. But, you know, if you're just, you know, and hey man, when I say man, I don't mean that in a gender neutral whatever way, you know. But
dude. Yeah,
hey, you, you know, I'll say like, look, you know, you're not alone. You know, this isn't like something that you you have your own unique way that you're going to go through it. It's going to be your own unique adventure for sure. And it's going to be a bunch of challenges thrust on you that you didn't choose.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And then depending on where they are, it's kind of like the next step is so good.
Right.
What are you going to do about it? You know?
Yeah, right. Cause yeah, it's like, I noticed that too. When I got the diagnosis and all that, it took a while. I go, well, nothing's really changed. I mean, now I know. They just answered some questions and now someone's kind of trying to be a fortune teller and tell me my future. But that's not necessarily the truth. You still have control of it. I didn't mind it defining me to some degree, you know, wearing it on my sleeve a little bit. I wasn't going to be embarrassed by it or try to hide it. That's just how I did it. But yeah, I agree with that advice. Like just strap in because this is what it is and there's nothing changing it. So I'm big on like choices. Like most times in life, when you're going through, you might realize a certain choice is a big one or not. Sometimes they're small. They might end up being small, but they're actually larger later. You didn't realize it. But most moments it's like, you're lucky if you got one or two. Every so often you get a third option, but with FSHD, there is none. Right. There's no choice. So it's made for you. Yeah. You got dealt a really crappy hand. This is how it is. Now what? You know, you're still going to continue to do. What were your goals in life before this? Are they going to do the same? Are they going to change? I think everybody goes through a mourning period of it, what they thought they were going to do.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like, you know, just because you hear the words, the letters FSHD and you go to Dr. Google and you figure things out does not mean that is your future. But I think the way you say it, you know, man, maybe you need to make a shirt that just says FSHD, you know, like strap in, like, here we go. This is how it's going to be. You have great advice. You give great advice through this episode and others. You have kind of that glimmer of hope, like, so what, you know, who cares? Like you just got to go through it anyway. You got to make those choices no matter what.
Look, since I've been diagnosed, and this isn't a flex, you know, I was diagnosed at the time I was, you know, a surfer. I was studying outdoor recreation. I had all these like dreams and goals and cycling and all the rest. And, you know, of course that all sort of ended right then, or at least modified. Right. And instead I found new ways to surf and, you know, led a big wave rescue team and sailed across the Pacific Ocean and, you know, worked as an EMT for like, you don't know what adventure's coming. You just don't know what adventure's coming, but you know, if nothing else, like, I don't know, there's a million sort of rabbit holes you could go down in terms of advice with FSH, but you know, one benefit of it is we have a hell of an excuse. You know, and don't hope nobody without FSH watches this because we're going to lose our secret weapon. But you know, we can use that as an excuse to like, you know, sort of be lazy and not do it. And some people will, and that's unfortunate. But we also have an excuse for doing what we actually want to do.
Yeah.
People are like, but you're not being. But what about responsibility? And all this? Yes, you have to take care of your responsibility. But it, you want to go climb of whatever or swim or whatever or. You know, experience going to go skydive, whatever. Like, but aren't you afraid of? I've got FSH, dude. And they're like, oh yeah, okay, cool. Like, whatever that means. You know,
they just know it's not good, right? They're like,
yeah. They're like, oh yeah, good. God bless you, man. That's great. You're amazing. You're like if we like, you know, freaking if we do just about anything, everybody's like, wow, you're such an inspiration. It's great.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people, right? That if they bicycle a long distance. We do it as FSHD people like, wow, you know, we have one of our, you know, board members that does that on a regular, you know, biking his ass off and people are like, that's amazing. I think it's amazing no matter what,
like 100%.
Wow, yeah. That's awesome. You know, I can't do that. I couldn't do it when I was, you know, had better muscles and I could do more stuff.
Yeah. You know, but you know what? Not wanting to prolong or get on a rabbit hole. I think again, we have to be careful that if you're doing whatever you're doing, and the reward is being able to reach some goal. Mm-hmm. You're not orientating towards the just doing the thing in itself, and you're getting the dopamine hit from the result and not from the process.
Not from the process. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just saying we have an excuse to do the process. We have an excuse to PT every day. We have an excuse to be 1% better than we were the day before. Mm-hmm. And it's great because everybody thinks we're some superhero for doing it, even though it applies to everybody.
It does. It does. Yeah. Well, thanks, Ryan, for being here on this great episode. This was a lot of fun. I know we kind of threw it together. You jumped on with me pretty quick. Yesterday or 2 days ago, we were talking about, hey, you want to do an episode? And this came off the cuff. Great. We're closing up shop here from here. So please, guys, take a look at Tua Float anywhere you can find them. Honestly, you probably Google it too. You can see all the stuff going on. Great articles out there. Great videos out there that Ryan Levinson is in. I found a lot of them. And I want to research Ryan a little bit, know the great things he's talking about, not just on this platform, but others. A lot of great information to dive into. He gave us a lot of great information today. So I'm hoping that if you're listening to this podcast on like Spotify and everywhere else that you find him on demand, that you're like pausing, you're like putting little hot spots within those minutes. And like, I got to go back to that part. I got to write that down. I got to look into that. Because I did. I was telling Ryan the whole right side of my notebook was empty. The thing is full because there's things I want to do. This is my homework to get my 1% better. And you make it at least a pathway for us to figure out what does that look like for us. So thanks, Ryan. Thanks for doing this for us.
Let's do it, brother.
Let's do it.
All of us. Let's do this. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. I appreciate every opportunity I have to talk about this stuff. It gets me pumped. You know, I'm ready to freaking go. Let's go. Let's do it. All right. Thank you.